Well, hi, this is Dave. Thanks for joining. Thanks for your promptness. And thanks to those of you who inquired about how I'm doing. I'm still dry and in Houston. I appreciate it. Things are going good. We're dealing with a lot of stuff here, but I'm excited about talking about our final seminar on neuromarketing, but I want to see, are there questions or clarifications or any comments that you have on anything that we've talked about so far or anything that we didn't get to talk about that you wanted to, especially from last time? I know we kind of had to do a little wrap while there may have still been some questions. Anyone? You know, the recordings are on the page that you downloaded the outline, and they can be downloaded as an MP3 or online playback, so if there's anything you want to go over. If there are no questions or comments, or anybody want to check in or just say hi?
Hi, David.
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Great. Excellent. Any questions or comments? Final call?
Okay, I've got a question for you, David.
Yes, go ahead.
So are you dry? Are you sort of safe
everything,
there?
I'm great. My ranch is about 60 miles west of Houston, and I got out just in time on Saturday. I'm going to have some road and some bridge repair there, but everything is fine. Everything is fine here in Houston. My wife is doing a PhD program at Texas A&M, which is about 60 miles north and east of here, and we have a little place there. She stays during the week, and that's fine, too. So, in other words, I am a longhorn in recovery, for those of you who know anything about Texas and University of Texas, also known as an Aggie husband these days. So, speaking of transformations. Yeah, thank you. Everything is fine. I've offered the ranch to a couple of families that have been displaced here. A lot of stuff is going on here, as you see in the news. So I'm very fortunate. Other thoughts, comments, or questions? Well, we'll move into our material, and then I'm going to have some time at the end for any comments or questions that you have. We're going to bring together and apply the first three seminars now to talk about specifically neuromarketing, your professional services and products. Here's the quiz for this seminar. Some of you are familiar with this quiz that I've given to you before, and it's not a trick question this time, as I've done before, to not include the answer in the multiple choice. So the answer is one of these, okay? The Wharton School of Business surveyed several thousand professionals to examine the primary factor that determined whether somebody actually engaged or whether they declined services from the professional. What do you think was most important? It was the same reason for declining or the same reason for engaging? Years of experience, reputation, amount of fee, degrees and certifications, stating recommendations and fee clearly and confidently, and state of the economy. We'll come back to that in a minute, for you to consider the answer. Here are four questions. I'd like you to jot down immediately your answer as a yes or no on the outline, or just a yes or no if you don't have a copy of the outline in front of you. One, do you earn your living by offering others goods or services? Immediate yes or no. Do you work for yourself or run your own operation, even in part-time? Does your work require elastic skills, the ability to do a variety of different functions through the day? And last, do you work in education, training, human resources, or healthcare? If you answer yes to any one of these four questions, you're in sales and service. If you're a doctor, attorney, accountant, consultant, coach, or business professional, you're in sales and service. To deliver a fantastic experience to your prospects is the best sales strategy there is. So now let's look specifically at neuromarketing. Here's how I would define that. Neuromarketing integrates biological and social sciences to understand unconscious choices and the underlying brain activity that determines consumer behavior. In other words, the real reasons people decide to buy, whether or not they're conscious of it. When we engage potential prospects with a product or a service in mind, we invite them to part with their resources, including time, attention, and effort. If they do, we will bring value and they will benefit from the engagement. They just don't always know it right up front. Teachers sell their students that the science lesson they're teaching is interesting and beneficial. In healthcare, the physical therapist helps someone recover from injury to handle resources like time, attention, and effort because patients can be healthier if they use those resources wisely. Here's what we know. To move people effectively and powerfully requires seeing them as a participant and a collaborator. Here's what happens if you don't do that. When people see a physician, fewer than 50% who get a prescription from this expert consultant actually fill it. Of those less than 50% who do fill it, fewer than 50% of those take it as the physician recommended. So when somebody is motivated by fear and pain, inconvenienced by time and travel, and have to pay to consult an expert, less than 25 actually follow that expert advice. It doesn't become their story. They're simply instructed what to do. So consider this question now for yourself. Write down a specific number as you hear the question, whatever the first number that comes to mind. What percent of your real work involves informing, convincing, or persuading people to give up something they value for something you have, something that will bring them great value? Almost 10,000 professionals around the world were surveyed to address this question. Almost every one of them considered this aspect a critical component of their success. Yet, while most people believe direct persuasion is essential for professional success, the time allocated to engaging and directly persuading people was in the very low single digits. What we find valuable and what we may actually do can significantly vary. When we work for ourselves, as entrepreneurs, we become salespeople as well. What people in sales do is to move people. You know how you can tell the ones who don't do this? They're the ones with the really skinny kids. The persuasion industry, now informed by neuromarketing, focuses on most everything we buy. What we purchase for emotional reasons and then justify by logic is shaped in ways so subtle that we may not even recognize it. Here's an example of a failure in influence. A cigar manufacturer spent considerable money on an ad that depicted a beautiful smiling woman handing out cigars to her husband and his friends. It was attractively produced in an elegant English library setting and widely distributed. The result? A dramatic fall in cigar sales. Why? Well, when men smoke cigars, they unconsciously feel dominant and important. By showing a woman, encouraging a man to smoke, and being subservient to her offering, the ad psychologically countered the male customer's intent. So, let's consider some misconceptions about selling. For several years, my good buddy Art Wilson was the number one salesperson in IBM's considerable force of over 10,000 healthcare sales professionals before he moved to a senior executive position there to train their sales forces. He then took an early retirement to start his own hugely successful consulting company, working with the sales forces of many multinational corporations, and to co-found with me our What's Next Exec Retreats. Now, you'd never guess that he was in sales. He's a big, gentle, laid-back, lovable guy, kind of like me. In researching this material, I asked him if there are common misconceptions about selling. Here are the two biggest misconceptions he passed on. One, selling is a natural gift. For more than 90% of people, including the most successful salespersons, this simply isn't true. Someone may do the right thing for the right reason, but it has to be combined with the right style and emotion and connection. It's an art and a science with its own body of knowledge. That's exactly what my attempt has been in these four seminars, to present this body of knowledge for you to apply in your way. The second misconception, the best salespeople have no call reluctance. Over 90% of the best salespeople regularly have call reluctance. They hate it. Art hated it. I said, Art, why didn't you tell me this in the beginning? But they do it anyhow by getting in the optimum state of mind and sticking to their plan. You don't have to be motivated for something. You just have to have a plan and stick to it. Pick people you want to reach out to and do it. Shrink the change, a designated number of contacts per day. For a number of conversations and interviews with outstanding sales professionals, from those conversations, these two questions I've seen form the heart of the sales exchange. One, if the person you're selling to agrees to buy, will his or her life improve? Secondly, this is also to you, when your interaction is over, will the world be a better place than when you began? If the answer to either of these questions is not yes, you need to recalibrate. It's said that marketers often make these mistakes, assuming people are rational, assuming people are eager to change, assuming that once someone knows the things the way you know them, they'll choose what you chose or what you offer. Remember, it's what you think you already know that will most prevent you from learning. Professor Harold Koh teaches law and emphasizes that in an attempt to understand the law, or in understanding just about anything, the key is to focus on what he calls the 1%. To not get lost in the details, but to think about the essence of what's really important. The 1% that gives life and meaning to the other 99%. Understanding that 1%, and especially being able to explain it to others in a brief, simple, succinct way, is the hallmark of a strong position. The 1% is the essence of simplicity and clarity. Whether you're selling a product or a service, or trying to convince anyone of anything, what's the 1%? When you can answer that question, again, clearly, briefly, simply, in 10 words or less, and convey it to others, you and they are likely to be moved. It's a question if somebody suddenly wakes you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and asks you this question, you should be able to say it. Einstein said, if you can't state your position simply, you don't understand it well enough. Seth Godin doubled down to Einstein and said, if you can't state your position in 8 words or less, you don't have a position. The purpose of the 1% is not necessarily to move someone else to adopt your idea. The purpose is to offer something so compelling that it begins a conversation. The measure of success after your statement of what your purpose is, your hottest undeniable benefit, is when the other person says, tell me more. Now, the tell me more is not licensed to start talking in paragraphs, but to simply say another sentence or two that explains, elaborates, maybe illustrates. The other person begins being a participant to eventually arrive at an outcome that appeals to both of you. Remember, it's always about the client. It's not about you. You engage the co-creation of a new story rather than handing somebody a prescription of information. So, to articulate your 1%, consider these three common types of value propositions. One is the one-word pitch. What is the one characteristic that you want associated with your name, your business, or your brand? Now, we've gone from 10 words to one here. This is an exercise. A one-word equity. When anyone associates or thinks about you, they think of that word. They associate you with that word. When anybody says that word, boom, you come to their mind. For me recently, it was to make up a word, neuromentor. It amalgamated psychology, neuroscience, and mentor coaching. I liked it so much, I trademarked it and initiated the first of a new series of online offerings and renamed my blog. Other examples, now each to date, are a little more famous than NeuroMentor. What technology company do you think of when you hear the word search? What credit card company comes to mind when you hear the word priceless? Google and MasterCard, of course. In his 2012 re-election campaign, President Obama built his entire strategy around one word, forward. Two, the question pitch. In 1980, Ronald Reagan was running for president of the United States in a really grim economy. Reagan simply asked a question. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? The question was designed to make people come up with their own answers for agreeing or not. When people come up with their own answers for agreeing or believing or responding to something, they endorse that belief more strongly and become more likely to act on it because it becomes their story. The third type of value proposition is the Twitter pitch. Brief, simple, specific. A micro message of 140 or fewer characters. The mark of an effective tweet, like that of an effective pitch, is that it engages recipients and encourages them to take the conversation further. Now, further may be responding, sharing a tweet, clicking a link, or signing on for a seminar. What tweets do you think have the highest positive rating? Think about it for a minute. Readers assign the highest rating to tweets that ask questions of followers. This confirms the power of questions to engage and to persuade. A question aligns the energy field of the brain for a specific focus. Asking the right questions has more power than giving people the right answers. Appreciative inquiry can get much better results than seeking out and solving problems. So think of your preparation as having two parts or two steps, your purpose and your plan. For your purpose, three key questions can help you prepare your value proposition. You'll clarify your purpose by making sure that you can answer these three questions. What do you want them to know? What do you want them to feel? And what do you want them to do? Always have an action plan. Now, your plan. Before you connect with a prospect, write down these four things. What would we talk about that would be the highest value objective for a client in this interaction? What are two or three good questions to ask the prospect? if this discussion is successful, what's the next best action for that person and for me to take? And number four, if we have time, what are some additional possible topics for the discussion? Now, these questions were gleaned from a number of studies and a number of discussions that I've had with various people. For most people, the opposite of talking isn't listening, it's waiting. When others speak, we usually divide our attention between what we're saying now and what we're going to say next. And the result is a mediocre halfway position on both, especially if you're waiting for the person to kind of catch a breath and insert what you want to say before waiting for the end of the third or fourth paragraph. Some professionals don't even bother to wait if they feel entitled. A typical study found that physicians interrupt the majority of patients in the first 18 seconds that they begin to speak during an appointment. This often prevents the patients from describing what brought them in the first place, for telling their story. Now, here's an example of listening differently. Suppose you're raising money for a charity and ask someone to contribute $200. She says, "Sorry, I can't give $200. Consider that an offer. Perhaps you can donate a smaller amount. Or she might say, "No, I can't give right now." Consider that an offer as well. Focus on the right now and ask when might be a better time. Or even consider the entire sentence as an offer, perhaps to contribute to your charity in some other way, such as being a volunteer. This way to hear responses as offers, as information, which comes in all shapes and sizes, is to reframe the way you listen and then change the way you respond. When both parties view an encounter as an opportunity to learn, the desire to sell or to win really fades in the background. It becomes a different mindset of collaboration and engagement. When we move from selling to serving, we engage the recipients as collaborators and become empathically attuned to their needs and to our effectiveness in benefiting them. This non-salesy selling is the ability to influence, persuade, and change behavior while crafting a link between what others want and what you can provide them. We elicit from people what their specific goals are and frame what we can do to help them achieve those goals. So here are three phases of sales mastery: engage, enroll, and create conviction. Each component is based on knowing who your client is, the specific reason you're about to engage in the conversation. Let's look a little more closely at these three phases. One, engage, which is to connect and create interest. Important to your story is your hero. Who's the hero of your story? Heroes come in all varieties. Teller, listener, customer, product, location, even tribe. The hero needs to fit the goal. The hero is the character in the story who gives the audience a point of view. All the passion in the world won't do any good unless you have some place to put it. That's where the hero comes in. The hero serves as guide and surrogate, the character that the reader or listener identifies with. Here's the key. If the audience experiences the story through the hero, and the story leads the hero to embrace a call to action, then your listener, your audience, will automatically hear your call to action as well and be inclined to do the same thing. The hero enables your audience to feel the change your story promises. In every story, there's an element that can make the difference. That's the hero, the character, the product, or the brand the reader or viewer identifies with. Focus on the experience you deliver. Seminar 1 included how business and marketing stories like novels and films consist of three parts: the challenge, the development, and the resolution. The hero faces the challenge and develops it to the resolution. The hero may sometimes surprisingly be hard to pinpoint, but unless you do, you have no story. Here's an example. When people donate to a charitable cause, it's not to save the lives of tens of thousands of children, but the best story is how you can save one child. That means you, the donor, can be the hero. For example, donation increases when moving from the abstract to the specific. When a famine in Ethiopia was substituted by a picture of Royka, a 7-year-old who faces a threat of severe hunger or even starvation, donation increased over 25%. How do you make your prospect the hero for your professional engagement? You simply ask the prospect, what do you want to achieve? Where would you ideally like to be in 1 year? What constitutes an amazing achievement for you? Then you can know how you can help them get there. You need to know the single most important thing you can offer them. And remember, it's not about you, it's about them. To find that single most important thing, that 1% for them, there are 6 keys to preparation. This is in your outline. 1, know your prospect's challenges and needs. Know your own product and its advantages and benefits. Know your competition, but never depreciate a competitor. Know the potential objections so that you can have answers ready. Expect the best, a state of positive anticipation and confidence. Create demand, ideally for the prospect to convince himself or herself. Anchor yourself for success. Peak performance comes from being in a peak state. The hallmark of a true professional is the ability to manage a state of mind. So the 4 keys to making effective contact: set specific goals, be creative, playful, and fun. Once more from my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have a plan for what you're going to say, and do it in abundance to qualified contacts. You're more likely to stop yourself from making contact if you're not in a peak state, such as to believe that you're going to be an interruption for the person. To engage the prospect, 2 things are the foundation of all persuasion: connection and rapport. Prospects will choose you because they trust you, like you, and especially because they have confidence in you. This confidence is the belief that you can help them get what they want or need. Importantly, they will choose you because they believe you have their best interest at heart. The answer to the Wharton School of Business quiz: the single factor that most determined whether someone engaged or declined professional services, the clarity and confidence of stating the recommendation and the fee. When it was there, a disproportionate number of people signed on. When it wasn't, the other direction. Caring people buy from caring people, and they will even help you close, as long as you have their best interest in mind. People want to feel cared for. We all want to be appreciated. And remember the law of reciprocation. Whatever you put out, it will come back manyfold, positive or negative. There are 3 psychological tactics that I have seen ample evidence for earning instant credibility. 1, argue against your own product or service. Indicate who the product or service is not for. It indicates you're not trying to sell it to everybody, but a very specific benefit for certain people. Secondly, which of these sounds more believable to you? 60% of American households recycle regularly. 60.37% of American households recycle regularly. 78% of participants said the more specific number was more believable because it inferred accuracy. People believe precise numbers. And third, when you make a claim, provide proof to back it up. There are different forms of proof if you don't happen to have scientific studies, statistics, personal stories, testimonials, research, professional or media-given accolades. A second phase of sales mastery, enroll. To do this enrolling, discover your prospect's needs and challenges. What are their primary needs, interests, challenges? The real problems that we can help them solve. Highlight the problems and resonate with the pain. This is what the prospect may minimize or deny. Four qualifying questions to have in mind, though not necessarily to ask out loud. What does the prospect really need? What does the prospect really want? What is their primary challenge? And do they have the authority to make the decision? Remember that focus changes state. What would be the best benefit of you doing this? When your question prompts someone to imagine, it becomes real for them. If you told them instead of asking them, they likely wouldn't believe you. Remember, facts and information are outside in, processed by the prefrontal cortex, not the decision-making area of the brain, not the first processor of any information. So to enroll, do two things. Ask questions. This creates a focus. It's a canvas to paint a picture. Ask questions and get a real experience from the prospect inside themselves to get their real answers. Questions are the greatest asset you have. Questions empower you and the prospects by putting them in a state that is more focused and makes things more congruent. Secondly, do something very real. Engage as many senses as you can for a full experience. Some of the highest paid people, as we've talked before, in this country are people who induce state changes. What sells is what puts someone in a better state, hopeful, more expectant. Here's an exercise I'd suggest that you try. Every night, for 7 nights, come up with 3 ideas about how you can get potential prospects to feel like they already own your product or service before even buying it. Think of creative and unique ways to do that, of how it's going to benefit them, how they're going to experience it, or, depending on your biorhythms, first thing in the morning. Now, most of the 21 you come up with may seem sort of goofy, but you only need 1 or 2 to change your business. Here's an example of a real estate agent showing a house. The agent doesn't ask what you think about the living room, but ask instead where you'd put your entertainment center. The agent wants to have the prospect experience it as if they already own it. One realtor's clients liked a particular house they viewed, but they hadn't decided yet. He then orchestrates an entire meal catered to the family in that home that they're considering. They have a fabulous meal, see the fresh flowers he's bought, and can picture themselves in that home. That house and experience became their story. The average sale from a showing for realtors in the very low single digits. His close rate after the meal and the experience, just over 80%. Model success. Find successful people and see what they do. They most likely make the experience real and use all 5 senses. If someone's eating food, they change their state, and the state links to the immediate anchor. That's why so much business is done at lunches and dinners. the realtor changed the state of mind of the purchasers and linked pleasure and family togetherness with that house. He created a vivid Rorschach for the family to project their hopes and excitement in a very pleasant state of mind. Whatever's happening around someone, when they have a strong feeling, it will be linked, anchored. It's not logical. Investment seminars at the best steakhouse in town. Is there any relationship between dog chow and a bell? Well, if they're coupled, Pavlov showed us a dog thought so. Pavlov's dog linked the bell with food and salivated, and then only the bell was enough to cue the anticipation. Put people in an environment that creates the state you want to link to your product. One example is the brilliant series of Super Bowl Budweiser commercials of the dog and the Clydesdale, who are buddies. They induce a state of mind of connection and bonding, and the release of oxytocin in the mind, in the brain of the viewer. What's the best signal of an oxytocin release? Awe. The message goes right to your hippocampus to connect that experience with Budweiser. Here's another example. The new car smell that puts you in a state of mind to buy a new car. BMW makes their brochures with a new car smell. I can verify that. The total sensory and emotional experience with the salesperson, that's you, matters. Get creative. Brainstorm. There's always a way to make it real and effective. Ask questions. Create an experience. Point, tell, and show. You want a blank that will blank. Is that correct? You want an investment that will bring you security and income. Is that correct? Ask a question that will put people's minds back on their challenge. Focus on the experience that they're buying. Remember, that's the reason we do things, is how we imagine we're going to feel. Show to emphasize if all this comes true. If you had a seminar for your people, what would be the most important thing they get out of it? If you had three results, what would those be? If you don't get those, what would it cost you? Here's an example from one of my training program offerings. If your organization had an internal mentoring program, how would your people benefit? Especially if the mentors were trained in the mind and brain sciences of change, including conversational, social, and emotional intelligences. Ask questions. Don't tell the client. Ask them how much effectiveness or success would you have if you did this. Don't tell them, get them to tell you. And the third phase of sales mastery, compel, to create conviction. People don't buy facts or features. They buy benefits for themselves. And remember, selling is the transfer of emotion. For someone to buy, they must feel certain they'll get what they want. Conviction starts with you first, then your client. But they have to buy or attend an event for their reasons, not yours. The number one way, give them the experience and conviction that they will get what they want and need out of your service or product, that it matches their primary challenge. The number two way, match to their number one value. For example, if it's freedom, show how it will enhance their freedom. Find the dominant reason for buying, even though the prospect will want to believe it's for conscious and logical reasons. Copywriters tell us there are five great motivators for marketing. Fear. Car and life insurance people use this. Exclusivity. To be special or chosen. When narcissism goes shopping, a sense of specialness appeals and even creates a special bond. An exclusive offer, a private invitation. Greed. Now, although it has a negative connotation, The true meaning of greed is a rapacious desire for more, to succeed massively. Guilt. Nonprofits sometimes use this. And the need for approval. Product advertisements, think about the ones for cars, for watches, for luxury items that appeal to status. The task of sales involves the science of neuromarketing. The questions you ask people determine what they focus on. At any time, we're only focusing on a small band of data which is available to us. Our brains are like a camera in that we only see what we focus on. So do one feature at a time. Determine what someone focuses on, not the whole load. Our imagination is 10 times more powerful than our will. To review from Seminar 2, fear is the number one reason that stops action. Learn how to utilize imagination. Guide visualization to make it real for someone and paint it vividly. Ask questions. When you ask a question, it changes the way someone focuses and what they focus on. Whatever somebody's focused on, like for negative reasons, a fear that they have, ask a question to refocus on the gain. Make it real and assume the sale. When people don't buy, it's because they've linked buying with more pain than not buying. When people do buy, they link buying with more pleasure than not buying. And remember, people buy for emotional reasons and then justify with logic. Here's an important aspect that I want to cover. Convert objections into commitment. If someone has an objection, rather than counter or ignore or circumvent it, find out specifically what it is. Engage it. An objection equates to getting more information. The best salespeople average 5 objections before a conversion. And be sure an objection is not the projective voice of the seller. Think of an objection as a question in disguise. An objection provides an opportunity to do 3 things. Hear the primary, the real concern, so it can be addressed and reframed. Understand the person's belief and their fear. And listen to the real question. Objections are signposts, your resources. A mistake is to fight the objection. The key to influence is to align with the person. Remember to get inside the circle with that person. In spite of the fear, will the benefit be greater in doing it? If the answer is yes in their gut, they'll proceed. The best way to respond to an objection is to take each objection and interpret it as a question. Rather than a reason for not buying, hear it as a question for requesting more information. I can't afford it. Reframed. Please show me how I can afford it so it's worth it. I have to talk it over with somebody else. Reframed. Please give me enough reasons I can go ahead and buy it without having to check with somebody else's opinion. Welcome an objection because it's information and a stepping stone to success. Treat an objection as powerful and important. Perhaps even compliment the objection as a good question if it is, because it allows both sides to think about it and consider it. So here's a list of considerations to convert objections into commitments. Don't engage the objection by countering it. Focus directs attention. Hear them out. Feed it back as a question. It puts the objection back to the questioner to examine and then explain. Often when somebody tries to explain an objection, they'll withdraw it. Get more information. Is it the real objection? Align with the prospect to collaborate. In a collaboration, you're on the same side. Both of you are in the circle. If you fight an objection, it will limit you. It will keep you outside the circle. So instead of countering it, align with it. I appreciate it, or I respect how you feel about that. Or it is an expensive investment. Turn the objection into a question. Reframe it. Questions are the genesis of focus. You can't answer an objection, but you can answer a question. It seems like the real question is, can you get enough value to justify buying? Or it sounds like your concern is, how can you get benefits now? Focus on the benefit rather than the concern. For example, if there's an issue with expense, reframe it. Even brag about it and do it up front. And say why it's the most expensive of the various offers out there. 8, assume the sale. The best persuaders assume the sale. Congratulate them on a wise decision rather than thanking them for the sale. Now, one more thing I want to talk about with you that I think is important before we stop and have questions is the psychology of closing. And this is really important in neuromarketing. This is the point that both the salesperson and the prospect may hate the most. So do the close as quickly, specifically, and painlessly as possible. A man had a painful tooth that he knew needed to be extracted. He called his dentist, whose patient he had been for a long time. The two knew each other really well. He asked how much the dentist would charge him to extract a tooth and how long it would take. The dentist said, I'll charge you $185, and it'll only take a minute. The man responded, only a minute? That's a lot of money for just a minute. The dentist said, well, if time is an issue, I can take as long as you want. Having your closings planned in advance, word for word, is particularly beneficial, but sound natural and spontaneous, like you're talking, not reading a script. Major requirements for closing. Engage a positive, enthusiastic mindset. Clarify the client's requirements. Help the client understand specifically what you're offering. Throughout, facilitate rapport, friendship, and trust. Focus on the benefit the client will get and match the product or service to that prospect. So there are 4 aspects. The prospect must want it, need it, afford it, and use it. Here's a summary of some closing strategies. Never tell a prospect that he or she is wrong. People convinced against their will are of the same opinion still. Go with the objection, indicating it's a valid concern. Then engage in your message. You may want to get third-party proof, someone else who has had similar objection, saying how it worked and how glad they are of a purchase. Don't knock the competition. Sell the value and benefits of your product. Don't engage in personal issues with the client. Don't assume authority you don't have, promises you can't keep, or like overselling. Avoid negative expectations, such as deciding the person won't buy. And remember, the hero is the person, place, product, or brand that enables someone to feel the change your story promises. How can you make your client the hero of his or her story? So make it easy and create a future. Create a relationship that lasts through the years. The most important part of the engagement is to give more than expected and to generate an ongoing relationship. To prevent buyer's remorse, consider future pacing. Future pace every time someone purchases. Have buyers imagine themselves in the future, ways they will use their product or service in the future. A year from now, what will you be doing with this training that will make you glad you've done it? Link something present to your product. For example, I build this into my training of mentor coaches, a quarterly mentor group, and a white paper, free attendance at some of my teleseminars, a registry for referrals, for corporate mentoring programs after the training, a monthly mentor group teleconference for 12 months to apply, and each around a specific continuing learning topic. So develop a relationship. Give them a reason to buy. Theirs, not yours. Emotional and logical. People will put off buying if they can, so build units of conviction. Steps. Make it fun. laugh, change states. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Have I said that before? So, in summary now, and in closure, here are the strategies of successful people who are top sellers. A summary. One, affect your own emotional state. Reset after the last experience, a number one quality. Prepare yourself physically and emotionally. Two, qualify prospects. Find their deepest needs, the core emotional need that drives the person, the challenge or the pain point. Then teach them how to get it through what you offer. Three, manage the prospect's state of mind. Four, give prospects a way to justify buying to satisfy a need. Five, remain flexible. The person most flexible controls the situation. And to be successful, know the outcome, take action, know what getting closer and getting further away each look like. Change your approach until you get what will benefit the prospect. And finally, become a team player, consistently attuned to the prospect's needs. Is there more value than the concern they bring? Create and sustain interest. Build trust and rapport continually. And finally, imagine inventing a device that can record memories, dreams, ideas, and transmit them to your brain, to the client's brain. This device, this game-changing technology, is storytelling. So that's essentially what the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset management for success, and neuromarketing are, is creating an effective, engaging story co-created with your prospect. I hope you've enjoyed the views and the synthesis of the material that I brought. I hope you find it useful. I'll be eager to hear if you find it useful and how you apply it. So we're going to have a brief discussion, but don't hesitate to contact me. You have my email from the mailings to you, dkruger@mentorpath.com. I'll be eager to hear from you and how I can be of help to you. We're in discussion mode now. Questions or comments from anyone? Manage the background noise so that I can keep it on open mic here. So that there's not noise, your microphone will pick up things you won't even hear. So unless you're ready to ask a question or make a comment, if you would remain on mute, star 6, please. Please remain on mute, star 6, unless you're ready to do a question. Comments or questions or anything you'd like us to talk further about? We have 5 or 6 minutes. Has this been useful to you to think about what you're doing with your practice and your clients or your prospects? I'm getting a little lonely. I'm staying dry here in Houston, but I'm getting a little lonely. What's been the single most important thing that you've heard and want to apply during this series? Anyone? Well, I have some reluctant people. I have a number of people who are sending me emails. I welcome that kind of correspondence. Send me an email if you have any questions or if there's something that I didn't answer or you have any feedback or just any follow-up and response. Thank you all very much for your participation. Thank you for all of the comments and emails that you've sent. I welcome that ongoing. Thank you very, very much. It's been my privilege to put together this information for you, and I hope it's been beneficial to you. And I'll be eager to hear. Bye now, and thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, David.
I don't know.